Bristol, For the Record, a new local oral history podcast from BCFM Radio in partnership with MShed Bristol and funded by the National Lottery Heritage Fund.
These days, Bristol enjoys a vibrant and friendly LGBTQ plus scene with a variety of gay districts, nightlife and culture. But this has not always been the case due to hate, ignorance and legislation. For the first time, the 2021 census included a question on sexual orientation and it revealed Bristol has over 23,000 people. That's 7% of residents aged 16 and above identifying as LGBTQ+. For this episode of Bristol For The Record, I have heritage scholar and art educator Jack Scholder to shed light on Bristol's LGBTQ+ past, present and future. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Marcus. Lovely to talk to you this evening.
Thank you for your time. Let's get to it. What does being part of the LGBTQ plus community mean to you? And how do you feel about the term?
So I am a fan of the term LGBTQ. I tend to use the term LGBTQIA plus to be a little bit more inclusive of other identities. And I also tend to use the word queer to cover all of those terms as well. Queer is one of these terms that has been reclaimed by the community on the whole because it encompasses so many different things. Some members of the community do have some issues with the word because it's been used as a slur, it's been used pejoratively towards them in the past. But nowadays, we haven't experienced that so much. I know when I was growing up, I was called gay, fag, batty, all of those. So for me, queer doesn't have those connotations. But when it comes to LGBTQIA+, it's an acronym that works, and it's an acronym that has been changing over time as well. The LGBTQIA+ community is one of those ones that we embrace change, we embrace new ways of describing ourselves as we develop the language for it. So that's what that term means to me, what being part of that community means to me, which was the first part of that question. It is all about community for me. It's about supporting each other, about standing with each other and recognizing that we're all part of the same rainbow family. So that means standing up for each other when perhaps one part of that acronym is under attack. So for example, the trans community at the moment is facing so much attack from the media, from politicians. And for me, it's about standing with my trans brothers and sisters and being like, yeah, we're here to help and support you. And the way I can do that in my role as a historian, as an educator, is to make sure that trans stories are included in the conversation whenever we're talking about queer pasts, but also when we're talking about the past and history in general. Trans people have always existed and they always will do. So it's making sure that that is recognized.
Why do you feel that trans people are receiving a lot of heat at the moment? Why is that happening?
So that's happening from the media, that's happening from politics as well. It is one of those things that I am still trying to see where the roots of it have come from. It's definitely been amplified by big voices, particularly on social media, saying all sorts of really ignorant and horrendous things and people kind of jumping on that. We've seen formerly beloved people, particularly children's authors who pretended to preach messages of love and understanding, actually turn around and preach a lot of ignorance, bigotry and bile that has actively hurt people. Because in saying that, it is saying, okay, yeah, it's fine to attack a small group of people, and it's not okay. And it's something that politicians have picked up on as a buzzword, as a talking point, And now it's become almost daily when we will see something in the press, in the news, from either a politician or a public figure that has just made trans people's lives just that much worse, and for no reason whatsoever.
So the T in LGBTQIA plus is for trans. For people that don't know, can you just go through each letter for us, please?
Of course, yes. Sorry, I'm so used to talking using the acronyms that I have. It slipped my mind that some people might not be familiar. So yes, LGBTQIA plus. The L stands for lesbian. The G stands for gay, so gay men. The B is the bisexual members of the community. So that is people who are attracted to different genders, all sorts of different genders. The T stands for the trans community. Q is queer or questioning. So queer is that lovely nebulous little bit of everything. And questioning is those people who aren't quite sure whereabouts they fit on the gender and sexuality spectrum. The I stands for intersex. So that's more of a medical description. So that's when people are born with all sorts of different things happening in this super area. And the A stands for aromantic or asexual, also known as ace or arrow. The plus is for all of those things that we haven't quite discovered vocabulary for yet, but it's also to represent that inclusivity. What I really enjoy about the acronym is that the L comes first, which has only really been a thing since the 80s and the 90s. And that was to really reflect the massive support that the lesbian community gave to gay and bisexual men who were really suffering during the AIDS crisis. So as a way of kind of recognizing our queer sisters, we're like, yeah, we're going to put you first in the acronym. And I think that's just a really lovely way of acknowledging the help and support that was given at the time. And again, it really reflects that whole sense of community, which I've talked about a lot as being really, really important.
So interesting. I didn't know that. I hear the term all the time, but didn't know the specific details. So thank you so much for that. Now, more about you, Jack. What are your experiences of living and working in Bristol as a gay man, good and bad?
Oh, that's a good question. So my time in Bristol has been a little bit interesting. So I moved here in 2020, just before the pandemic. So my experience in Bristol on the whole has just been being in my house, because there was so many lockdowns that lasted for so long that I feel like I'm still in a process of discovering Bristol. I visited quite a few times before I decided to move here, so I definitely felt a kinship with the city. My experience of living here as a gay man has been positive, hence why I'm still here and why I chose to move here in the first place. Bristol is a city that's always been a bit different, has always been accepting of new people, new ideas, and it's always been a bit rebellious as well. And I think that really vibes with how a lot of LGBTQIA plus people feel. So on the whole, my experience of living here has been positive. There's lots of queer venues, queer friendly places, and not just bars as well. One of my favorite shops, Mila, was a plant shop, and it had the inclusive flag in the window. Everyone who worked there felt like they were very visibly queer, and they were very, very welcoming. So I've been able to find really positive LGBTQIA plus spaces in Bristol. My experience of being a gay man at work, on the whole, has been fine. I've worked with various heritage organizations. Some of them have had a national scope. Some of them have been more community focused. And sometimes I've found it more difficult than I think it should have been to encourage these organizations to share LGBTQIA plus histories. Sometimes it was seen as, oh, it's an add-on, or, oh, it's a bolt-on. How can we, you know, would it look weird if we're saying this? It's like, Well, no, because currently we're not saying anything. So just getting colleagues to be comfortable sharing these histories alongside the other histories that were being shared. So yeah, even within the heritage sector, although some people are doing fantastic work, some organizations have really embedded LGBTQIA plus histories within the histories they share. I found some organizations to be a little bit more hesitant and a little bit more resistant. And it feels like a lot of that kind of comes from fear of maybe saying the wrong thing, or maybe fear of tabloid press running stories like, oh, heritage organization is sharing woke histories. It's like, no, it's just sharing histories. As I've said before, queer people, we've always existed. We've always been part of what's going on. Let's share that alongside all of the other things that we're talking about as well. It feels like a no-brainer to me.
Where does this fear come from, in your opinion, Jack?
So this fear, I think it comes from not wanting to put your foot in your mouth and say the wrong thing and accidentally upset people, which is understandable. However, as a member of the LGBTQIA plus community, I'm much more upset when we're just not mentioned at all, because why have we been excluded? Some people say, oh, but you know, a person's sexuality has nothing to do with their achievements, what they've done. It's like, okay, but let's think about it for a moment. If we go into a museum or a gallery, if there's a little blurb about an artist's life, fairly often they'll tell you all about their romantic relationships, particularly with artists, about how they may have had affairs with their models or things like that. Or if we're in a museum, we might be hearing about someone's family connections, they may have married, particularly if money is involved. And it's like, okay, in all of these, we're hearing about romantic relationships. We're hearing about heterosexual relationships. So why are LGBTQIA plus relationships not mentioned? Why are we seen as something that, oh, we can't really talk about that when we're really happy to talk about these relationships? It just feels like there's a double standard that some people just aren't really willing to question or explore. So I like to challenge that whenever I'm working in a heritage organization. And if they're a bit like, oh, I'm not sure if we can mention that they were gay, it's like, okay, but you've mentioned all of these people being straight.
Okay, so that leads on nicely to us exploring some of the key moments and movements in history relating to LGBTQIA plus in Bristol. Can you give us some examples over the years and decades?
Sure, of course. So if someone is really interested in exploring LGBTQIA plus history in Bristol, I really recommend a resource called Know Your Place. So Know Your Place is an online map. And because homosexuality was only decriminalized in the 1960s, a lot of what we would describe as queer history has been recorded as legal cases, so lots of arrests and things like that. However, I like to focus on some of the more uplifting points in history. So in the 1970s, Bristol had its very first Pride. It was known as Bristol Gay Festival. And what particularly strikes me about this festival is that not only was it a celebration of queerness, but it also really had that community aspect to it. So Bristol Gay Festival, the very first one, not only was it one of the very earliest regional prides, and by that I mean outside of London, it was also set up as a fundraiser. At that time, Gay News, which was the national queer news publication, it was facing a legal case because it had published a poem, and a quote-unquote activist called Mary Whitehouse, who was all about censorship and making sure everything was fine and understanding, sued the paper for blasphemy, which in the 1970s is like, we're still doing blasphemy in the 1970s? Apparently we are. So Bristol Gay Festival was a whole mix of things. There was music performances, film screenings that happened across the city, and it was all a fundraiser. That became Bristol Pride. There was a bit of a break for a while, but in the 2010s, Bristol Pride, as we know it today, came back. So it's all kind of grown from there. In the 1980s, the Arlfeeney had an exhibition of Robert Mapplethorpe work. So Robert Mapplethorpe is a gay photographer, and his works are very provocative. Sometimes they're very explicit, sometimes they're very, very suggestive. And the Arlfeeney has done some really great exhibitions. And I want to mention this because Robert Mapplethorpe was an out and proud gay man. His works were explicitly queer. There was no way of kind of avoiding the queerness within them. And I think that this is a really great moment of cultural institution celebrating the work of a queer artist and not kind of hiding away from that fact. So that was in 1983. So fairly recently, but my idea of recent is a little bit skewed. To me, the 80s was 20 years ago instead of 40 years ago. So there's that. Sticking with the theme of cultural institutions, in 2013, M Shed had a big exhibition on LGBTQIA plus history in Bristol. So M Shed is a local history museum, for want of a better term. It tells the story of Bristol, and it shares Bristolian voices and the people who have made Bristol. And what I particularly like about the legacy of this exhibition, it wasn't just an up for 3 months and then gone. There's a permanent display of LGBTQIA plus objects and artifacts that are on display. And what really gets me excited is that these are part of the protest displays, because as I've mentioned before, the LGBTQIA plus community, we have to fight for our rights. We have to stand up for our queer brothers and sisters, because we're under attack a lot of the time. So the fact that we are there in the protest shows that we are a community that care about each other, and we care about each other's civil rights, equal rights. So I like that there is a real kind of, yeah, I'm not sure if that will translate, but a real sense of like, we're a community that is active and we support each other, and we will cause a stink if we have to. And I really like that that is kind of the legacy of that exhibition. Another key moment for me in particular is in 1995. So again, to me, the 90s was 10 years ago. No, it wasn't. We're coming up to 25 years ago here. In 1995, Freedom Youth was founded. So Freedom Youth is a support group for young people who are LGBTQIA+, and it is there to help them find support, find community. It was Freedom Youth was one of the first services of its kind to offer this support to young queer people, which is particularly important because during this time, Section 28 was enforced. So Section 28 was a law that was passed by Maggie Thatcher's Tory government, and it forbade the promotion of homosexuality, which is very, very, very vague wording. And it basically meant that schools, doctors, anywhere where you might go for support, if a young person was struggling with their sexuality or their identity, a teacher couldn't say, it's okay, you're fine, it's okay to be gay, it's okay to be a lesbian, it's okay if you're trans. They weren't allowed to say that. So the fact that this service existed despite that law is incredible, and it's still running today. So it's one of the first of its kind and one of the longest continually running services for queer young people. And that's in Bristol. And I think that's pretty damn special.
That is really special indeed. So you mentioned Freedom Youth there as a standout LGBTQIA plus organisation. Mm-hmm. Are there any others in Bristol, but also, you know, groups and clubs and institutions, venues, etc.?
There are, yeah. Bristol has a long history of queer venues. I mentioned a fabulous queer shop earlier that unfortunately is no longer with us. It closed because of the cost of living crisis. But Watershed, which is an event space and cinema on the waterfront, if you go up the stairs are decorated with the inclusive pride flag, and the loos are inclusive as well. They realize that, you know, everyone needs to use the facilities. We'll just make it as simple as possible for everyone to have a wee if they need it. There's also bars like the Bristol Bear Bar, which is a teeny, teeny, tiny venue, but still manages to host massive events like Leather Pride and things like that. So I think it's incredible that they're like really punching above their weight there. And yeah, a lot of these places are centered around the Old Market area. So still fairly central in the city there. And Old Market's got a long history of queer spaces. It's where the Hydra Bookshop used to be, which you can still see the signage for it, and the frontage still has a pride flag in front, as well as drinking establishments like the Old Market Tavern and the Old Market Assembly, which also has the Wardrobe Theatre in it, which hosts a lot of LGBTQIA plus themed shows. So the Old Market Assembly, again, it's had a long, 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 long history of being a queer venue. It was previously a club called Flamingos. And for a little while, it went by the name R7. So the letter R, the number seven. I'll let you say that to yourselves a few times, and then you might hear the pun. It's not great. But then they changed the name. So I'm seeing Marcus trying to work it out. Yeah.
R7.
Say with a Cockney accent.
Yeah. Mary Pop, R7.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Arse.
Yeah, there we go.
Got it.
There we
go. The cogs are going round like crazy. I think so, I need some AI or something. Thank you.
No worries. But yeah, there's lots. And in terms of, I mentioned Freedom Youth as a standout LGBTQIA plus organization at the moment. There was also a similar organization called Kiki, which was set up, and that was specifically to help LGBTQIA plus young people who were Black, who were of other ethnic minorities as well, because the experience of being queer is one thing. The experience of being Black, Asian, Indian and queer is something completely different. And we recognize that like that intersectionality like really, really exists. We hold multiple identities as well as our queerness. So I believe Kiki is still running. I need to do a little bit more research into them, but I wanted to mention that, you know, they existed because a lot of queer history tends to be focused on white queerness. And it's like, no, there's all sorts of people living in Bristol across the UK, and we need to recognize that and also celebrate those experiences and those histories as well. So I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that.
Talking a lot about Old Market, would you go as far to say that it's Bristol's gay village? Is that fair?
I think that there is an argument to be made for that. A lot of queer spaces do tend to happen around Old Market. And even today, there's lots of queer friendly businesses that open up around there. Old Market is historically been a space of the other. So, you know, it's where the drinking establishments were. It's where, you know, we've got a theatre, which tends to attract all sorts of people. But one of the things that I quite like about Bristol's history is like it doesn't seem to be as centralized as other cities. So it's not like Canal Street in Manchester or St. James Street in Brighton. For me, looking at Bristol's queer history, we don't have that kind of same concentration. It tends to be a lot more spread throughout the city. Again, a bit more happening in the city centre, but that's because things happen in city centres. But I think if we were going to say, yeah, this is the queer village of Bristol, I think there is an argument to be made for Old Market. I also feel like if we were going to do that, we need to make Old Market just a little bit queerer to really make that stick.
What are the arguments against?
Ooh, good question. Arguments against would be that queerness seems to be more proliferated throughout Bristol. So, you know, if we look at, for example, Know Your Place, we'll see that actually there's lots of other hotspots of queerness in Bristol. So again, particularly around like where the docks used to be, around Queen Square, around where several big parks were and are. I'll leave your imagination to think why that might be.
Dog walking, right?
Yeah, dog walking, long distance running, all of those things, just out for a hike. as well as other parts, other bars which weren't necessarily queer, but people who may have been cross-dressing were arrested for presenting in genders other than the one that they were assigned at birth, which again, so again, it really kind of proliferates throughout the city, but it does feel like Old Market might be our gay village if we really had to put a pin on it.
I think I read somewhere one of Bristol's first gay or queer pubs was actually in Clifton. Do you know much about that? I can't remember the name.
Oh, that's a really good question. I need to do a little bit more research into that because queer nightlife is something that is really, really interesting. But yeah, what I also find really interesting is that when it comes to queer spaces, a lot of the focus does tend to be on bars, clubs, drinking establishments. And it's like, there are other places as well. So for example, the theatre is a great place to explore your queerness because it's all about, you know, dressing up, playing roles. So if, for example, when it was illegal, the police came around, you're like, oh no, I'm just rehearsing a play. We're just doing costumes. You know, there are other ways and other venues that allow us to experience queerness.
Yeah, just doing Shakespeare. It was normal just to change clothes, right?
Yeah, and particularly when women weren't allowed on stage. So, you know, the female parts had to be played by a boy. So there's even a backronym that the term drag comes from, dressed resembling a girl. So that's where some people think the term comes from.
Can you share with us some of Bristol's LGBTQIA plus pioneers now and in the past? Who spring to mind and why?
That is a really good question. So Bristol's got a long history of queer people, past, present, and hopefully in the future as well. So one person that I want to mention as a pioneer, first of all, I think it's really interesting that you use the term pioneer. I think that's a really interesting descriptor for people. So, and that's really helped me think about who might I talk about here. So the first person I want to mention is Michael Dillon, who lived here during the 1940s. So Michael Dillon was a trans man, and he was the first person to undergo a phalloplasty, which is a surgery to create a penis, to create male genitalia. So Michael Dillon, he had medical training. He trained as a doctor and spent some time in the Navy as well. And I think because of his medical training, that's kind of how he worked through who he was, what was happening. And he even wrote a book called A Study in Ethics and Endocrinology. So a really kind of like medicalized text about his experience. And he published that in 1946. So at that time, the term trans or transsexual or transgender didn't exist. That doesn't mean that trans people didn't exist, because Michael Dillon. So the term that Michael used in his book was the term invert. And he took that term from The Well of Loneliness by Radcliffe Hall, which talks about inverts. So The Well of Loneliness, if you're not familiar, is one of the early published novels that deals with LGBTQIA plus themes. It's about a woman who is very much in love with other women. And as you might gather from the title, it's not the cheeriest of reads. But I wanted to mention Michael Dillon as an LGBTQ pioneer with a strong connection to Bristol. Other pioneers include Richter Norton, who lives in the general Bristol area. He is a historian and really pioneered the study of queer history and has made loads of resources freely available online. And I think he's a pioneer, not just in terms of the type of history that he's interested in, i.e. queer history, but also in his approach to sharing his research and sharing his sources as well by making them freely available. So anyone who's interested can just dip in, find out what they want to, and dip out again. And it comes from a reputable source as well, not just Wikipedia. Other pioneers, I want to mention Henry Pulteney, who did a lot of work with Freedom Youth and has really made it into something really, really special. So thank you, Henry. And I also want to mention Cheryl Morgan. So Cheryl is a publishing powerhouse and has won several Hugo Awards. So Hugos are like the sci-fi fantasy version of the Oscars. And if you ever in a lecture with her as well, you'll see them just quietly in the background. And I think that's such a power move. And they're also really interested in queer history, particularly trans history. And they are a real source of knowledge on ancient trans history as well, going all the way back to ancient Rome and even further back beyond that as well. So yeah, I just wanted to shout out to those people as being incredible LGBTQIA plus pioneers from Bristol.
Fantastic. And you're a pioneer yourself. Can you tell us more about your work and your current book, Museum Bums? Anything Bristol related?
Thank you. So yes, I work on Museum Bums with my fellow historian and art buff, Mark Small. And Museum Bums is essentially, it's us looking at artwork in a new way from a different perspective. And it's also a chance for us to have a lot of fun as well. So I do a lot of work with engagement in heritage stuff. And again, finding new ways to make things accessible is something that is my bread and butter, is what I do. So Museum Bums is me doing that in a really, really fun way. So we exist on social media, but we recently published a book, Museum Bums, A Cheeky Look at Butts in Art. And Mark and I spent a lot of time having fun writing that and exploring all sorts of bums in art. So we are thinking about beach bums. We're thinking about when is a bum not a bum, and asking some really, really big questions. And in our research, we found some great Bristol bums as well. One of our favorites is a painting that's on display in Bristol Museum and Art Gallery, just at the top of Park Street, and it's Frederick Glayton's Fisherman and Siren. And this is a painting. So as you see a fisherman, he's lounging on the rocks. He's looking a bit exhausted from a day of fishing. And we see a siren. In this instance, she looks a lot like a mermaid. And she's kind of like dragging him down. And it answers the question, do mermaids have bums? And the answer is, yeah, sometimes they do.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
I never thought of that. Thank you. I want to re-watch The Little Mermaid now.
Ah, yeah. So does Ariel have a bum? There's definitely something going on there. And when she's a human, yes, she does.
Any other Bristol bums that you can share with us?
There is a sculpture of Eve also in the Museum and Art Gallery. So Eve
from the Bible.
Eve from the Bible, I think it's Eve, or it might be the personification of truth. There's quite a few statues of ladies and they look very similar. That's just because artists really like to make beautiful women. And sometimes beauty can be a little bit bland. So unfortunately, Eve, or truth, she's not in the book, but she is there in the museum and she's beautiful from all angles.
That sounds great. So what does the future hold for you after Museum Bums? What is the future looking like?
Oh, that is a very good question. And I'll let you know when we get there. At the moment, there's all sorts of plans and exciting things, talks focusing on bums, also talks not focusing on bums, and lots and lots and lots of queer history in the mix as well.
Fantastic. How do you see the future role and movement of the LGBTQIA plus community in Bristol and beyond? How is it looking for you?
Interesting question. So for me, I see the future role and movement of the LGBTQIA plus community, again, really focusing on that community aspect. I see it as we will be working to support each other in terms of standing up for each other. There is no LGB without the T. We stand together, we fight for each other's rights. So for me, the future is about supporting each other, but also nurturing the next generation. I do a lot of work with young people, and it's helping them realize that, you know, it's okay to be who you are. I also see the LGBTQIA plus community being more visible, being louder, being more than just a lovely rainbow crossing on the street. We're going to be louder, prouder, in your face, and everywhere. We will be recognized. We won't just be hushed away. And we will be here throughout the year, not just during Pride Month. We're not going to be here just in History Month either. We're going to be here and supporting each other.
Jack Shoulder, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Marcus. It's been a pleasure.